You've tuned in to KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio. It's the morning show here on KRFY. I'm Jack, and across from me is Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jack. And to my left is Sandy Compton, who is in the midst, in the throes of this week of his 13th title publication. And so we're going to be talking to Sandy.
Twice in 8 days.
Two dates. I mean, the book released and then his appearance at Vandefort's.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Can I start off by, I'm not feeling too well. My Powerball ticket did not win the $1.4 billion. Now, the way I'm looking at it, and tell me if I'm wrong, but either I win or I lose. It's a 50-50, right? Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Okay,
yes,
so
either it's going to happen or it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and I don't understand. You know, I keep on losing.
Well, odds are figured on history, not the moment.
Well, it's sort of like when you fly in a plane, it's 50-50. Either it lands safely or it doesn't, right?
I think you're better off buying the ticket and then not actually looking at it to find out if you won or lost. Okay. Then you have that sense of kind of excitement.
Maybe don't go flying.
Yeah, and don't go flying. That too.
I mean, anyway, I will buy tickets on for Saturday's drawing. No one won it, and so it's going to be astronomic.
It's
like at $1.4 billion.
Okay, and the record is two something, maybe?
Something like that. Yeah. And
what are you going to do with all the money? You have a plan? Have you written a plan out? Because I have written a plan out for moments like that.
Have you? Well, yeah. I haven't.
That's good to have.
KRFY is actually going to benefit by the plan too.
Jim Healy benefit by it?
Because you are a KRFY person, you will benefit by it. You'll have such a big studio, you'll love it.
See, unlike you, I don't jump the gun. You know, my major thing right now is to get into the drawing on Saturday. That's to buy a ticket. Mm-hmm. You know, and then once I buy the ticket, then I can plan out how to spend my winnings. But without a ticket, there's zero chance of winning.
My plan is to not buy a ticket and to sell 1 million books.
Ooh, 1.2 billion.
Well, I know, but, you know.
Dream big, Sandy. Yeah, Dream big. Okay.
I don't need that much money. It would just make my life miserable, I'm sure.
My life, on the other hand.
I know.
We should talk about those million books that you're going to sell. But first, we are obligated to give our listeners the weather report.
Weather.
It is, as of 7:30 this morning, it was 45 degrees outside.
A nice clear. 45. It I was so. Just. How was it pedaling?
I was fine. Yeah, it was great. It was, I mean, I wore a sweater, but I thought it was very comfortable.
How was the drive?
The drive is lovely, as usual.
Okay.
Populated by several people who did not learn to drive. Yeah.
Oh, you must be in North Idaho.
I'm driving Highway 200, and that is just a madhouse most mornings about this time.
So. Yeah. Mm. It was the traffic, the school traffic is very
now. Yep.
And anytime I think going, if you have to cross Pine or Division, anytime between like 735 and 750, which I think is First Bell, it's tight in there.
Well, it's not as tight as it used to be when it didn't have stop signs.
True.
Going on Division. And now with stop signs, take my word for it, it's like so improved.
Yeah. Our weather report continues after
go
that brief traffic report.
What is it, Jack? Tell me about the weather.
We are hitting 70 degrees. Sunny, high of 70, light variable wind. Mostly clear tonight, low down to 40 degrees. Tomorrow, 71.
Ooh.
And sunny again. Low of 43 on Friday night. Saturday, sunny. High of 74 degrees.
Get out the sunscreen. Uh-huh.
I'm going back to the beach. It's water's a little lower now, but I think we could get one more dip in. Low of 45 on Saturday night. Sunday, high of 74. Again, and then low of 47 on Sunday night. And then it looks like on Monday, the high is 68. Mostly sunny again, but a slight chance of rain. And that is when it begins. Tuesday, we expect rain at this time, as well as on Wednesday.
We're going to test my new roof.
Yeah, you got it on.
Man.
Just in time.
Trial by fire, huh?
water. Yeah, anyway.
Okay.
I wasn't sure we were going to hit 70 degrees again this year.
I know you asked that question last week.
Here it is. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care if we ever do.
But, I mean, I guess what it means is going to be beautiful during the day, and it does, at least at our elevation, we're not expecting frost. So
it'll be crisp at night.
Yep.
Like that. I spent this last weekend at Eureka Institute, and I was amazed driving out there and being out there, the number of flocks of turkey, you know, that are they're just, and what was fascinating is there were a couple apple trees in there around their garden beds and whatever for vegetables. And a couple of the turkeys would hop up into the tree and jiggle apples off for the turkeys underneath.
Cooperative hunting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was rather brilliant until I observed that there was a compost pile with tons of apples. And you would think that they would just daintily walk over there.
They like their apples fresh, we do.
They must be. But anyway, I could have watched those turkeys work their shenanigans all day, and I did spend a chunk of the day doing that, and that was magic. But boy, are they going to be well-fed turkeys.
Apple finished turkey.
Yeah, think about that.
Oh, yeah. I live with a 2-year-old who likes when the turkeys come through our yard. He likes to chase them. Goes scaring them. He has found out that they're scared of him, and they and so he will, if he sees them outside, he will stop whatever he's doing and go run and chase them.
He was up here in the at the station yesterday, and I have to admit, Jack, that whatever you and Annie are doing, he's growing.
Yeah.
He is just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What fun.
Yeah. I think he left us some artwork, too.
Oh, good. Let's put it up on the studio walls.
We probably should, yeah.
I think we should. Mm-hmm. Great. And have him sign it. And then years later, when he's...
Yeah, we'll sell it in the online auction.
Online auction. I knew we'd segue to that. Do you want to say the word on that?
Sure. The online auction is ongoing right now.
KRFY online auction.
This is our biggest fundraiser of the year. It is full of premium items, which have been generously donated by members of our community. And all we ask is that you go and check it out. Take a look. It doesn't cost anything to... look with your eyes at www.biddingforgood.com/KRFY. But then if you see something you fancy, make a bid, because the proceeds from it will go to this radio station. And as I said, this is the biggest one. This is our biggest money-making event of the year. So we do appreciate everybody for pitching in.
And you can, if Jack said that too quickly, how to connect to it, you can always go to the KRFY.org.
Yep.
And follow the prompts there.
You absolutely can.
What's the best item, do you think, that you have for sale this year?
Well, I mean, the Turks and Caicos week stay at a condo on the beach is pretty, that's pretty good. And I think, though...
That lottery money is going to come in handy.
Yeah. But I think the...
I'll buy Turks and
Caicos. Yeah. I think the lasagna from Ivano's, though, might be.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I haven't had one of those in a while, and it was nice to see that make it into the auction.
Yeah, yeah, that's a goodie. That's a keeper.
Mm-hmm. Well, shoot, we had all these great opportunities to segue smoothly into talking with Sandy. Nothing to say.
Well, you're talking with him already. It's
Look, Jack, Sandy's in the studio. When did he arrive?
What do you want to do?
Yeah.
Sandy...
Yes.
This is, we decided, probably your 13th published book.
Yeah, I had to count up again. Yeah, but 13 seems to be the right number. And 13 was my number when I was playing basketball as a Heron Bobcat. So maybe it's my lucky number. Maybe.
Well, you know, I'm just looking at the calendar. You should have waited until tomorrow, Friday the 13th, and your 13th publication.
Well,
ooh,
I got better plans for Friday the 13th.
Okay, whatever. It's just a suggestion.
And besides that, I wouldn't be talking to you guys because you're the thirsty people, right?
Yeah.
That's right. The 13th is next week.
Yes, yeah. It is. Yeah.
Whoa. Uh-huh.
That's good because the book signing at Vanderford's is on the 7th, and that would have already been passed if it was next week.
Back to the future. okay, yeah, let's, Vanderford's, October the 7th from 1 to 3, Sandy will be there. And what will Sandy be signing
reading? I have a new book. It's the third in the series about a psychiatrist named Mary Magdalene Miller. It's called Her Name is Lillian. And Lillian is a 15-year-old anorexic girl whose parents bring her to Dr. Miller and to save her life. And Dr. Miller concludes that the best way to do that may be to take Lillian away from her parents. So there's this kind of psychological and ethical questions going on in her mind, and there's a bunch of other stuff happening in Dr. Miller's life at the same time. This is my third book about Dr. Miller. The first one came out in 2014, and it was The Friction of Desire, and it's not about sex. The Friction of Desire is defined as the worse you want something, the harder it is to get. And it was Larry Longquist, her client from that book, that stated that. It's interesting to me. I don't know sometimes where my characters come from, but Mary Magdalene Miller is one of my very, very favorites. It's kind of weird to be channeling a woman. She is the narrator of all these stories, but she's very interesting and pretty normal person for a psychiatrist, I think. Sorry if I've offended any psychiatrists out there, but she sometimes wonders why she's a psychiatrist because she doesn't have a lot of personal stuff to work on. But I like this character a lot. She's a great woman.
When did she first appear? I don't mean in writing, but when did she first appear in your literary or creative landscape?
I had just turned 60, so it was probably in 19... Yeah. it was... So, I'm trying to... Okay, yeah. No, I had actually just turned 65. Oh, my goodness.
Trying to find the date on
2012.
There
I'm sorry,
go.
2012. Okay. So I was out doing car therapy, which is like depression therapy, right? You're driving around in your car trying to figure out why you're depressed. And I hadn't written a book for quite a while. And part of it is like sometimes being a writer, being a particular somebody who writes books and not being recognized as such is somewhat depressing. But I've gotten over that. It doesn't matter really anymore. It's like, just write books, Sandy. That's what you like to do, so do it. Anyway, I was driving around, and something in my mind said, when you get home, turn on your computer and start writing. And I said, I can't say what I said because I can't say that on the radio.
That's right.
But the little thing in my mind insisted that I do that, and so when I got home, I went into my little writing cubicle and turned on my computer and grudgingly put my fingers on the keyboard. And the first thing that came out was, once there was a man who was not, well, I could probably read it. I don't know. Anyway, this paragraph came out And it was a woman telling me or telling the world about one of her clients. She's actually a doctor. She's a psychiatrist or MDs. And she wants to call him a patient, but he will not be called a patient. He's a client. And there's not really a lot wrong with Larry, except he's just trying to figure out what to do with the rest of his life. So he buys 30 sessions with her and pays cash up front and gets a discount. Anyway, so here's this woman and this guy, and he won't lay on the couch. He wants to walk around, and so they walk. They walk around this little city, and I thought at first it was Madison, Wisconsin, but it's not. But it is in the Midwest, someplace upper Midwest, and it's on a lake. The name of the alternative high school is Minnehaha Alternative High School. So just this world starts unfolding through the voice of this woman. All I have to do is just listen and write it down. And that's kind of how I write books. I don't know exactly how that happens, but my character, Archer MacLean, came to me in a very similar way. Just a little scene. And later on, when I started a short story, this character that was in that scene shows up and goes, this is not a short story, it's a book. I argued with him, but he wouldn't listen. So it's my basic method, if you will, is I take my characters and I put them in situations, and then I watch what they do, and then I write it down. Which, as I understand it, there are other writers who feel and write basically the same way, so I'm not alone in that. But it is sometimes so much fun. Louis L'Amour was one of my favorite writers when I was a younger man. And there's a story about him. When he first got started, well enough known to be writing books on a really regular basis. And he wrote dozens of the Western sort of romance novel type of things. He's sitting in his office and he's typing away on an old Remington and just going at it as hard as he can. And his little 5-year-old daughter walks into the room and she goes, "Daddy, why are you typing so fast?" And he says, "Because I want to see what's going to happen next." and that's kind of how I view some of my writing. It's like, yeah, I want to see what's going to happen next.
So, okay, you've got, this is the last of the trilogy.
Yes, there's three of them, yeah.
What in your character or what in you said, this is the story, this is the last one, rather than continuing the character into a fourth
or
a fifth?
I haven't said that yet. I have three books, but there is a conclusion of this last book that I've thought about where I might go with it next, but I haven't decided whether or not that's going to be a possibility. A lot of the questions in Mary Magdalene Miller's personal life are answered at the end of this third book, and what I'm going to do next year, I'm going to put all three of them together in a collection called Something About Miracles. And then, just to make it convenient for you to read all three of them at the same time, plus I think I'm going to enter it in a couple of book contests. The three of them are probably some of the best writing. No, I can't say probably. They are the best writing I've ever done.
Okay.
In some senses, although I really like the Archer MacLean books a lot too, but there's something about the way that this all fits together that makes it really possible to put them all into the same publication. I just decided that I was going to wait till next year to do that for a number of promotional reasons. So, but this one is Lillian could be the best book I've ever written.
Okay. Can I ask you something, and we'll get back to Lillian, about the actual act of writing. Now, I don't want to make any assumptions about your age, but probably at one time as a writer, you had pencil on paper or a typewriter. How has a computer where you can just erase or you can just, get everything out real simply, and rather than, ooh, my arm is hurting, that sort of thing. Yeah, has your act of writing change over, and your attitude towards what you're getting out of yourself? Do you see what I'm asking?
I do, and I can tell you that the computer has made life a lot easier for writers worldwide, nationwide, industry-wide, whatever-wide. The Microsoft Word is revolutionary in the sense of how we put our thoughts down. It makes revision very easy. You can actually take one document and compare it to another document and so forth and so on. My first book that I ever wrote was a collection of short stories that has never been published and might get yet, who knows. It was called Stories I Bought for a Quarter and Stories I Got for Free. And it was about a guy hang out in a coffee shop, and he would buy people coffee for a story. But it was written on a portable Remington electric typewriter, and revision was like, you don't even want to think about it. It was painful and time consuming. And then the second book I ever wrote was a kid's story called Elizabeth's Search for Water. And I wrote it in a notebook by hand. And I still have the notebook. It's a spiral bound. It's red. It's like 8.5 by 11. But Elizabeth's Search for Water is one of my kids' books that's published. It's about the queen of the Western Sea who doesn't know where water comes from. And so she goes to her friend Albert the magician, and Albert turns her into water. And she goes through the water cycle and in the meantime finds love and all these other adventures, of course. But it's a kid's story. Lots of alliteration and a magic flying cabin and then a dog whose ears wiggle. And it's it was fun to write. And I finally published it like 20 years after the fact. I was digging around and found the notebook and went, oh, I need to do something with this. So I did. And it's illustrated actually by a friend of mine, Maria Alberg. But the change is, I mean, the word revolutionary is not an exaggeration.
Yeah, I can remember as an undergraduate and as a graduate student, the blank sheet of paper was just intimidating. Where to begin? And, and whereas I find now composing for me, what little I do, composing like a letter or something, I can just go like crazy. If I didn't like the previous paragraph, I can move it or I can delete. It's liberating.
It is. It's also caused, well, there are, I am not the best writer in the world. I am, matter of fact.
Yet.
Well, okay, yes, I'm working on it. But my strength actually is as a storyteller. My writing skills are good enough to tell the great stories that come to me. And I am grateful for those stories. I try to make my writing, I try to use my writing to make the story shine. And often that works. But I don't know, the computer is, the revolution in printing has been a big deal too. Most of my books are printed on demand. I have a couple of boxes. Wait a minute. I have a number of boxes with books in them that I printed traditionally back in the early 2000s. But that printing revolution is the big deal. You can go to Amazon's Kindle Direct, or you can go to Lulu or Ingram Spark, and for very little or nothing, you can upload a manuscript, a cover, and tell them you want one book, and they will sell you one book, and the freight will cost you more than the book did. It's an astounding. And you know, when I was working for Multilingual, when you and I were working together, Jim, we saw that revolution.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember when I first went to work, it would take like 2 days to put that magazine together and send it off to the printer. And by the time I left to go to Friends of Scotch and Peaks, it was taking us maybe 3 hours to do the same thing that used to take us 2 days. It was just amazing. So
we're talking to Sandy Compton. His 13th book is coming out now. It's called Her Name is Lillian, the third in the Mary Magdalene Miller series. Jim Healy is here, and I'm Jack Peterson. There is a event going on tonight, am I right? No.
Yeah. No, Saturday.
Saturday. Sorry. At Vanderford's Books, a book signing 1 to 3 p.m.
And reading.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. Are you a good reader of your stories? I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's right.
I am. I'm a pretty good reader.
The reason why I ask that is if you ever listen to Robert Frost reading his poetry, there are not enough nails to drive into your head.
Didn't he read it? you mean
he was so bad at it?
Terrible. The last person you'd want to hear reading Robert Frost poetry is
Robert Frost.
Robert Frost.
That's crazy. That is so funny.
Didn't
Poor
he?
Guy.
I think he read at the inauguration of John F.
John
Kennedy.
Yes. Yeah.
What did he read?
It wasn't. I don't believe it was one of the famous ones. Was
no.
It?
Oh no, no. He wrote one specially for that occasion.
Right. Yeah. As they so often do. I was just gonna comment, going back, that I, as a child of the millennium, so to speak, that actually I find it easier to get out. If I need the physical document and either a pen or typewriter or something to prevent myself from going back and deleting all the time. Otherwise, I would go back and rewrite every sentence three times. If I was
so, you print off a copy and then hard copy.
No,
hard.
I haven't done any real sit down and try and write something more than an email in a long time. But I would either I was more productive writing in a notebook or or on a typewriter or just physically writing it out rather than trying to sit at a computer and not look at the internet and not, you know, not be distracted by anything and also not go back and delete every third word and, you know, do something like that. But that's different. I know that there are actual professional writers who love their typewriters even to this day.
Yes. Not for me.
Yeah,
you've moved beyond that.
Well, you know, there's a certain okay. So art comes to us through our hands. This is what we create with these guys. We have sculpture, painting, whatever. Well, maybe not dance, but still dance. Physically, our bodies produce art. Our brain thinks it up, but our bodies make it. And writing is an art that comes through our hands as well. So it's like, what do you want to use? Do you want to use a stylus and the old stuff that we used to write on? Do you want to use the mechanical typewriter? Do you want to use an electric typewriter? It's like, so how big a chisel do you want to use? Like if you're doing sculpture or or how broad a brush do you want to use if you're painting? It's the same kind of thing. It's the tool. So whatever tool you use is what suits you. I mean, some writers love to suffer, so they use a manual typewriter. Mm-hmm. It's like that's how they get their stories. It's like, oh my God, I was sitting using my manual typewriter and this story came to me. It's a matter of choice.
It's like, and you know, the creative process, the way it expresses itself, there's infinite variety. You know, some writers, particularly poets, probably still work with pencil and paper.
When I'm writing poetry, I often write with a pencil.
Mm-hmm. And it's even within yourself.
Yeah, it's within a journal or
perfect,
something.
Perfect. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Yeah. That's very personal. Poetry is, and not all poetry, but much of it is. So, and writing with a pencil is like journaling. You know, a pen or a pencil. It's like journaling, and journaling is a personal thing. So,
You know what I'm thinking about as you're speaking, you know, you Jack mentioned the manual typewriter. Maybe there's something about the click 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 as opposed to a computer is silent. Mm-hmm. You know, except the sound of the fingers going on it, but mm-hmm. you don't have like, ooh, wow, you must be working hard, Jack. I can yeah. hear it from the other room.
Uh-huh. Could be.
Pardon?
Would you guys like to hear a couple of paragraphs from Lillian?
I'd love to.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to read the opening few paragraphs, if that's okay. Of Lillian.
The third book.
The yeah. book okay. is called Her Name is Lillian. The author is Sandy Compton, and here we go.
Once there was a girl who so wanted to fly away that she endeavored to make herself light enough that she could use her arms for wings. When it became apparent to her that this was not going to work, she decided instead to make herself invisible. Though the goal had changed, the method of approach has not. She tries to do this through eating, or more accurately, not eating. Lillian is her name. When we first met, she had, for the past 18 months or so, been suffering anorexia nervosa, an eating disorder characterized by fear of becoming fat and refusal of food, leading to debility and even death. That's right out of the dictionary, by the way, a simple definition for a very complex problem. As that, it is not entirely accurate. Psychiatric textbooks, encyclopedias, and the internet go on and on, including internet sites that encourage it, unfortunately. But the basic definition will have to suffice for right now, because all the other additional information won't fit and still leave room for Lillian's story. My job is to root out the cause of Lillian's disease and effect a cure before the ultimate conclusion of the disease is reached. I'm her therapist. At least I am at this point. There are considerations that might nix that as I begin this, but I'm trying not to think about that too much and just continue to do my job as best as I am able. I've already said this in stories of other clients and or patients, but you may not have had a chance to explore them. Please don't get tense about tense. Some of this is written in retrospect. Some is transcribed from recordings of sessions. Some is listed from session notes. And some of it is from my personal journal, which is where I am working today, because some of this has not so much to do with Lillian as it does with other more personal stuff.
What I'd like to ask is, was it a conscious decision to tell, well, to have Madeline's as the narrator in first person as opposed to third person? Or did you find the voice to be more immediate, more?
That's how it began.
Okay.
So in the first book, when she introduces Larry, once there was a man who... And all three of the books enter the world by saying, once there was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then once there was a man who, the second one is called Scars on Top of Scars. Once there was a man who was a boxer.
Is that the sex one?
That's the second one. Yeah. I'm sorry,
Most of my stories are pretty G-rated, and with a little bit of R thrown in once in a while. I made a decision a long time ago that I would not put imagery into the world that would, I don't know, offend. And that doesn't mean I don't talk about sex, but I talk about it in a rather oblique way. And it doesn't mean that I don't talk about violence, but I do not, I try my very best not to put violent imagery into the world. Hmm. I think that as writers, as any kind of artist, that we are responsible for what imagery we put into the world. And some of it just doesn't belong here. We have enough of that in real life, which probably will always keep me from being really ultra successful, because I know that people love horror stories and they love big time war stories and stuff like that. But there's enough other people doing that. I don't think I have to do that, and I don't want to. So did I answer your question? I kind of meandered off there, I think.
That's okay. You got the whole hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is there, have you given us as much of the story of the book that you want to share with the listening audience at this time? Do you think, no spoilers now. People are going to read this.
Yeah. So, you know, there's let's talk about the other two Mary Magdalene Miller books, and then maybe a little bit about Archer MacLean. These are perennial characters, and if I had time, and I'm getting to have time now because I am retired, I would continue to write stories about these people for a long, long time. As I said earlier, I think Mary Magdalene Miller might be moving on into other places, but there are certain conclusions in her life in this book that she may quit talking to me. Mm. You know, in the sense of like, I'm done telling you my story. And that's kind of weird. It's like having multiple personalities or something, but it still seems to be what is going on. I mean, the first Mary Magdalene Miller book, Scars on Top of Scars, was just like when I started that book, I had no idea where it was going. But as soon as she identified herself as a therapist, and this is the question that you asked earlier about why that came about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It came about because that was how she identified herself. She was the one that was telling the story. When she said, she tells about once there was a man. There, we'll go there. Come on, wake up. I'm talking to my computer.
Ooh, the voice speaks to you. Madeline speaks to you, and now your computer.
Here we go.
This is layered.
This is the beginning of the Mary Magdalene series. Once there was a man who couldn't do anything else very well, so he became a writer. That is not to say that writers are incapable of doing other things well, but just that he was not. He wasn't such a great writer either, but of all the things that he couldn't do well, his writing was at least mediocre, sometimes good, and often, but not often stellar. It took him a long time, nearly 3 decades, to conclude these things about himself, but when he finally did, he wasn't surprised. He had suspected it on one level or another for a long time. However, through the art of denial, he had kept acceptance at bay for just as long. Acquiescing to his own mediocrity was not as difficult as he thought it might be, but in so doing, he was presented with a somewhat formidable task, deciding what to do next. That's where I come in. I'm his therapist, or more accurately, was. So that came out of my fingers into not this computer, but another one. Effortlessly, it just flowed out of me. And when she said, "I'm his therapist," I didn't even really know what her name was yet. I didn't know she was a woman yet. So we get down here. His name isn't really Larry Longquist any more than my name is really Mary Magdalene Miller. But those will have to do because AMA gets right upset when doctor-patient confidentiality is breached. So pretend for a while that this is just fiction. Not that there is really anything just about fiction, as Larry himself once said. So there, she declared herself right there. Up until that point, that person was a therapist, a psychiatrist. Client was Larry. But when she named herself, she became Dr. Miller.
Well, she becomes a character in the narrative in terms of she becomes the vessel through which you get information about Larry. Because when you, the passage you read, I thought, oh, it's going to be about Larry. Then all of a sudden was.
It's about both of them.
Yeah.
But and all three of these books are about not just her and her client, but also, like, Larry is in book three.
Mm-hmm. He reappears.
They become, well, I'm not going to tell you.
But, okay.
So okay. The characters that are...
Spoiler alert.
The characters who she deals with in both in the first book and the second book carry on through into the third book. Not some of them, not significantly, but like there's Madeline, the bookkeeper. Madeline is her office manager. And she and Madeline have this great relationship. And Madeline is it through, you know, it's like she's in all of the stories. And Madeline takes personal interest in Dr. Miller's life in a couple of ways. But there are certain things that Dr. Miller doesn't tell Madeline because she doesn't need to know. So anyway, Madeline's a great character as well. So,
my goodness, we could take a music break or we could just keep.
Let's keep on talking with Sandy because, okay. Yeah, I've got a gazillion questions to ask. The music we can shuffle and we can explain while we're playing them after Bird Note. I find the creative process, you know, and as you talk about it, how, you know, that almost you become a vessel for Madeline, you know, that that element of you're not really controlling, but in a sense you are.
Well, okay, so... Let's go here to a couple of my other books. The first book I ever published myself was called Jason's Passage, and I have like a couple hundred copies of them laying around here and there. I forced the ending of that book. I forced that book to end the way I wanted it to.
And you knew that?
Yes. Yeah, I knew that. And I wanted that book to end in a certain way, and I made it happen. Mm-hmm. But after... I had published it and printed like 3,000 of them. I came to realize, and not like immediately, but over time, I came to realize that that was not what I should have done. I should have been a little more organic about it and seen what the characters really wanted to do. The ultimate conclusion may have been the same, but it might have opened up a lot more possibility for stories later on. My two books about Archer MacLean, the first book, Archer MacLean and the Hungry Now, which is a bear.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about creative process. It took me like hours to sit and think about what it was like to be a bear so I could name that bear. The bear is hungry and it's right now. And it is how the bear would think of himself if he thought of himself. That's the bear's name. His real name is, his people name is Number Seven. But so when I got to the end of that book, I could have tied it all up in a neat knot and just, oh, yep, this is awesome and we're all going to live happily ever after. But instead, what I found the characters compelled to do was to go their separate ways for a while, to not conclude what had started too quickly. They both had, Sarah and Archer both had things to do that precluded being together. So then when I wrote the second Archer MacLaine book, Archer MacLaine and the girl wouldn't stop running. They meet each other again, very serendipitously. It's just like they happen to be in the same place at the same time. And that book is about a young girl who gets kidnapped, and it takes place, most of it takes place down on the Uncompahgre Plateau in Colorado. But the end of that book, the bad guy will not do what I want him to do. I want him, he's sitting at a stop sign in, he's sitting at a stop sign in California, and I want him to turn right and go off and have this disaster thing happen to him, but he won't do it. He turns left instead. And I tried to get him several times to turn right. He wouldn't do it. The end of the book is so much better because he wouldn't turn right than it would have been if he had. That, I mean, those kind of lessons are like, okay, listen to what these people really want to do. Don't stereotype them. Don't make them into something that they aren't. So it works for me. When I first wrote The Friction of Desire, one of my friends was quite unhappy with the way it ended. So I wrote a new ending, another chapter, and it still didn't satisfy his desire for this thing to happen, but it made it, the new ending was awesome. It's a really nice ending. But it still was not like all tied up in a nice, neat knot. I like that sort of the unpredictability of my characters is just fine with me. It's just fun to walk them, to follow them around and write down what they do.
Do you ever consider the reader in the writing process in terms of, I'm thinking in terms of, you know, someone like William Faulkner. Yeah, he didn't care about the reader at all. You know, good luck, you know, entering into my works.
I saw a Facebook post that shows a sign outside of a library. It says, drive as slowly as Faulkner takes to get to the point.
You can say that about Henry James, too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes, I want my readers to have fun. I want them to be touched. I want them to laugh. Dr. Miller is relatively funny as far as I'm concerned, and I want them to cry. That's what I want from my readers. I want them to be entertained. I want them to have things to think about. I want them to be able to imagine the place that they are in when they're with my characters. Yeah, I write for the reader, but the thing about that is I don't consciously try to titillate them as much as I try to interest them enough to carry on.
Okay. Okay, I can, you're resonating a lot for me. I used to teach in the days before I was on KRFY. And, you know, several things you said, you know, that thing about having all those piles of books of copies of your own works, that reminds me of Thoreau. You know, I think he sold like four copies of A Week on the Merrimack and Concord Rivers, and Walden was not a hot seller. And the other person I think of is Emily Dickinson. I think as she wrote, she became aware of the fact that there wasn't the reader out there who would get what she's doing, but she wrote anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and so that whole notion of how much does the awareness of a potential reader impact how you create your narrative?
What I think my ultimate goal is when they finish one of my books, they have the feeling that they've just had a pretty good or a really good meal, and they had enjoyed themselves, and maybe they want a little bit more. Maybe they want dessert, so maybe they're going to read another one of my books. But I want them to have to feel. I want them to feel like. I want them to feel full, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's maybe not exactly what you wanted for dinner, but I want them to feel full, and I want them to feel like they enjoyed the meal.
Hmm. How do you know when the story's over?
When I'm sick and tired of reading it. Uh-huh. No. That actually, when I know that the writing is over, when I know that the story's over a long time before the writing's over. The way I write is I'll write like three chapters, just bang it out, and then I go back and I start with chapter one and I edit through the first three chapters, and then I'll write another chapter, and then I'll go back to chapter two, and so forth and so on, all through the book. When I get to the end, then I let it rest for a while, and then I'll go back, and I'll start at the very beginning, and I'll just start polishing. And the last time I go through that book, polishing, is the time when I never want to see it again, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is going to go away as soon as the book gets printed and stuff. The first thing I'm going to do is read it and look for typos that I can fix. That's one of the really, really amazing things about on-demand publishing, particularly with Kindle Direct. If you are looking through your book and you see like something that's out of whack, a typo or maybe a continuity problem or something like that, you just fix it and you upload a new manuscript. It's so they participate actually in a way they participate in the proofing process. I have a number of other people who I've done books with. Dick Sonnixon, we're on his eighth book now, I think. No, his seventh book. And there's a couple of titles I'd like to mention. First of all, Dick's latest book is Whipsawed. It's his first attempt at fiction. And it's pretty dang good. It's not a whodunit story, because you know who done it at the very beginning. You follow this guy's life after he's convicted of being a bank robber. And I published a book for Garth Fisher about his time as a recreational therapist in a prison in California. It's called 5 Years on the Inside. Very interesting book. Very illuminating about how life is in a high-security prison. Without being, like, dramatic or judgmental. More like very factual, very, like... And then I think one of my most favorite books was a book called Hunting Tigers and Other Adventures on Christ's Mission in Old India. And it's the story of these two, it's a memoir, basically, that was put together by the daughter and son-in-law of the people that the book is about. But it's from their personal notes. And it's like, they went to India to mission with the Gonds. And when they got there, the first thing that the men came and asked the male partner in this missionary group was if he would hunt tigers for him. And he said he wouldn't until he saw the absolute devastation that a tiger attack would do to a family. And so he started hunting tigers. So here's this pastor out there with a double-barreled 50 caliber tiger gun, hanging out in a tree in the middle of the night, waiting for the tiger to come by. So it's anyway, and some other really interesting things happened to them. They had to leave India when the Brits left, because the Hindus chased all the Christians out. But it's a great story, and it's available on Amazon as well.
We're winding down.
I know.
It's 8:56. We're with Sandy Compton. And new book, her name is Lillian. It was released on Monday, and he will be in Vandefort's this Saturday, 1 to 3, reading and signing from Her Name is Lillian. Anything in conclusion you want to say?
I just want to say thank you to both of you for letting me prattle on for all this time.
I've enjoyed it. How about you, Jack?
Yeah. I've been mostly listening, and I have enjoyed listening a great deal.
Yeah.
I thank you very much.
Blue Creek Press is celebrating its 20 years of publishing, and it's National Book Month with Sandy Compton's 13th title, Her Name is Lillian. It is available at Vanderford's, the corner bookstore, and Amazon. And at Vanderford's, you can go and meet Sandy and listen to him read from the book and sign his book on Saturday, October 7th.
In pen rather than on his computer.
Yeah, that's correct. And I'll probably have some of my other books there as well.
Cool. Real briefly, in closing, I want to say that this Saturday at the Panada Theater is David Da Vinci, the Thrillusionist. Mm-hmm. And tickets are going quite rapidly to
the what illusionist?
Thrillusionist. I'm lucky I got that. Don't ask me to say it a third time. I don't know how it's going to come out. But the doors open at 6. The event begins at 7. And, you know, guys, this is the last time you might see me or hear me as a poor person. So,
oh, that's right.
That's right.
You know, yeah. Remember,
Saturday night could be a change for me.
Remember to have your change of address form.
Just let me have your addresses. I'll send you postcards.
Okay.
From wherever I'm at.
Those in an envelope with the cash.
Right. Coming up, there are going to be 3 songs on this date. Sort of a biggie. Lots of good music. It was on this date in 1962 that the Beatles released their first single in the UK, Love Me Do, and the story behind that.
Love me do.
Exactly. But the drummer is not Ringo Starr.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You know, there's a whole story behind he had just left Rory and the Hurricanes and joined them, but they didn't feel he was ready. But there's like 3 different versions of it, one which eventually has him. And then in 1968, Steppenwolf with Magic Carpet Ride was released. And then in 1970, Led Zeppelin III. And we have the opening cut, Immigrant Song. So you're going to be hearing all of this neat stuff after Bird Note here on 88.5 KRFY.
Our online auction goes on, continues till this Sunday, and I think it ends at noon Pacific time, but you'll have to check that out online. Our website is krfy.org. You can follow the links or go right to www.biddingforgood.com/KRFY. What else was I going to say? Important information. It's election time today on CP at 3. That is the Sandpoint High School show that airs at 3 o'clock on this radio station.
Cedar Post. That's what CP means. Cedar Post.
Cedar Post at 3. And one of the students from the Cedar Post is interviewing candidate for mayor Jeremy Grimm. I believe that's today. And then next week, I think they have Kate McAllister. So you can hear the high school perspective on the upcoming elections if you tune in today and tune into this radio station on Wednesday mornings for continuing coverage of or continuing interviews with all the candidates for city government. And on the 17th, we're broadcasting the forum live, October 17th. Tune in on Tuesday night for that. And with that, I think I've done it.
Go out and enjoy this incredible weather.
What a weekend it's going to be.
Yeah, it just...
Golf weather. Golf.
Yeah, good luck finding the golf balls with all the falling leaves, Sandy. This is a perfect time to walk along out at Kinnicksu, the woods, Pine Street Woods, or along the Bay Trail. Just get out and enjoy this time here.
Thanks, guys.
Stay tuned for Bird Note.
Sandy's going out to enjoy this time of year. Thank you, Sandy.
We're going to start with the Beatles, Steppenwolf, and Led Zeppelin right after Bird Note all day long here on 88.5 KRFY Ponderay.